And the satellite's in place as we go to LA live to join the great Jim Jefferies, friend of the show. How are you, Jim? You're home, Jim. LA.
Hello, lads. Thanks for having me. I'm home. I just got home. I was just on tour. I just did a gig in Iceland.
How did that go?
Well, it's a country of 300,000 people, so the people who stay there are kind of weird. Like, imagine if Dubbo was a country. You know what I mean? Like, it's the people there are very odd, and there's the sun doesn't go down in summer, and then the sun doesn't come up for like 6 months in winter. So it was just like the sun coming through, and they didn't have blackout curtains. And I went down to reception. I was like, "There's no blackout curtains." And they were like, "Yes, we have heard this complaint before." And then the guy made a joke. He goes, "Here in Iceland, if you want it to be dark, we have this trick. Shut your eyes." Piss off, you idiot.
I like it a lot. So Iceland, it's the type of country, you know, some countries have strong suits. Like when you think of Miss Universe, you think of Venezuela. Or if you think of long distance running, you think of Kenya. I think of Iceland and I think of Eurovision Song Contest. They're the type of country that can come from way back to win that thing.
Well, you're thinking of the movie Eurovision that was based in Iceland, which was almost a documentary. but I was meant to perform in Tel Aviv, and they cancelled the gigs in Israel because of acts of war. And they said, how about, like, the government cancelled it. They said I couldn't come in because of acts of war. And they said, how about we reschedule it for 10 days' time? And I was like, you reckon you'll have that Palestine thing figured out by then? You reckon you'll be all good in 10 days? You're like, you're close, are you?
So in 20 countries with 22 shows, like, which ones are the most receptive to your type of humour? Which ones do you go, I can't wait to get back there?
About once a year, I do a show in Amsterdam or Rotterdam. Like, the Dutch are very good. Like, their English is very good. The Germans are remarkable. I've got about a 15-minute routine on Hitler right now, and they were lapping it up. You think they would have gone the other way?
Because they don't have a strong history in comedy, do they? There's no real culture of stand-up or sketch comedy coming from the Germans, is there?
No. They're a serious bunch. I'll tell you where you can't perform. No one. The French don't want English speaking comedy. What? They don't want us to even come. Every other country like welcomes you, and the French is like, we don't want to hear you with your English language and all that. Like, I know Eddie Izzard went over there and performed in French, but they have no want for English speaking comedy. They want to watch mimes and people on a unicycle with a top hat or some shit.
Their sense of humour, if you've ever seen a Jacques Tati film, it misses the mark for me. Or, as you say, they don't want to hear it in any language. A mime is what they consider to be hilarious.
The height of entertainment. That's a big thing.
I don't get it. Well, speaking of the heights of entertainment, congratulations on the 1% Club with Jim Jefferies, which has gone bonkers on the Seven Network, so much so it's been moved to Monday primetime at 7:30. It's a ratings smash. I've been enjoying it. I enjoyed getting a mention in one episode. Do you remember that? You gave me a bit of a shout-out.
Did I mention you?
Yes, you did. One of the questions was the answer was about someone with the same initials as first name or last name. And then you were talking about comedians, and you mentioned Jim Jefferies, and then you went, or could it be Mick Molloy? And I was sitting at home with my two boys, who are 10 years old. They're falling off the couch. They thought it was some kind of magic.
That's right. It was a question about alliterated names. That's the only reason you got to mention alliterated
names. I know. But my favourite episode, and it's so good, and I've got to say, I bite on it. I just sit there and try and work out. I'm usually knocked out at about the 60% mark, let's be honest. I'm not a giant in that department.
I get knocked out at about the 30% mark, and I know the answers. I'm serious. Towards the end of the show, I sort of forget. I go, what was the answer to that? And then I'm always trying to figure out the questions as well. And sometimes I'll read out an answer and I still don't get it. I'm still like, I don't really know what's going on. Early on in the show, I asked if my dad could be on an episode. And they said, no, it's a conflict of interest. Your dad can't be on the episode. And I said, I tell you what, if my dad wins, I'll pay the money out of my own cash. I'm that confident. confident that this bloke won't get past two or three questions. And my dad rang me up today and he goes, I go, how are you going, Dad? He goes, I just watched the episode. He goes, I got one right this week. Pretty good for me. One right. Like, it's like...
He's proud. I watched one the other night and it made me laugh because you kind of snookered yourself because you had one where there were about 10 people still in it for the last question, and then they all went out and at the same time. So you had the unenviable task of still trying to put a positive on it. Like, normally someone sneaks through, but there was, you go, there's 10 people here, someone's going to get through, the whole lot of them, gone. Boom. And you're going, oh, well, you can't all be... she tried to end the episode on a high after everyone had been shown the door, which I thought was that a testimony to you.
That episode took the longest to record because they'd only ever thought that five people could get to the end. So there's a setup for five people to stand on the stage with all the stands and all that other stuff. Yes. And they never foresaw that 10 people could get through. And there was a whole committee meeting afterwards, like, do we have them all stand on the stage and then the end, just leave them in their seats in the front row.
So that, I liked it a lot.
Just like no one foresaw the show you're taking over on Monday, the balloon show, that was going to be a hit.
Oh, yeah. That's what happened. Channel 7 had a show about balloons, and they can't figure out why it didn't work out. I don't know either. But, so I'm replacing the balloon slot.
Yeah, the balloon animal, I think, is... I think they should have persevered with it, you know. Once you've done the poodle and the giraffe, you're kind of done, aren't you?
I tell you what, when my 10-year-old was, when he was like 2 and 3 and all that type of stuff, there was this guy who was a balloon artist who I used to get to come over to the house for birthday parties. And he'd go like this. And I said, I saw a guy at Universal Studios who was doing balloons. He goes, do you have blonde hair, like a mohawk type of thing? And I go, yeah. And he goes, yeah, I've twisted with him before. That's one of the terms that they use. He goes, yeah, I've twisted with him before. And then he goes, but then this guy, all the Hollywood mums were coming over, and he was working his magic. He was balloon twisting. Here's another flower for you, my love. And all that time, he was giving them all flower roses.
No, I'd like to see a Chinese spy balloon that was a balloon animal. Wouldn't that be great? A giant dog floating over American airspace.
This is the thing is, I've never worked in the spy business, but I've always been led to believe that you get in there as covertly as possible, you get the information, then you piss off without anyone noticing. Yes. I'm not worried about China anymore because China's using balloon technology. They've decided to use the slowest moving, largest vehicle ever made to take spy photos to hang That's over right. America for about 4 or 5. I watched a lot of spy movies in my day. I've never seen James Bond get into a wicker basket.
It's a bit like the French using the guy from the Yoplait balloon. Oh, look out. Here he comes. Where's the fun in that? Hey, I was watching you on Instagram. I follow you on Instagram, of course, and you've just posted a very homoerotic shot of you with about 10 mates topless in some kind of fjord. Was that Iceland?
Where was Iceland? All you get to do in Iceland is there's hot springs that you can stand in, and it's all warm, and they're very excited. So we went to this one place. It was hot springs, and so that's me and all the promoters and the other comics and all that type of stuff. Good-looking bunch. We've all gone down to the hot spring, and it's meant to be relaxing. There's 7 steps you have to do. So the first thing is you get in the hot tub area, the hot spring. Then you have to do a cold plunge, which is agony. Right?
Oh, yeah.
Then
you've
got to get out of that, get into a sauna. Then you've got to get out of that and rub salt into your body. Then you've got to get out of that and get into a steam room. Then you've got to have a shower. And then you've got to get back into the hot. And you're meant to do that 2 times. Not very relaxing. It's like, I'll tell you what, that Wim Hof or Will Hof or whatever his name is.
He's got a lot to answer for.
Yeah, he can live as long as he bloody wants, mate. I'd rather be warm and live a shorter life than being cold. Hey, I want to speak out about a tragedy that happened, but Tina Turner.
Yes.
Tina Turner. I'd like to put me best foot forward, and I'd like to throw me hat in the ring to sing Simply the Best for the NRL, just as a dedication for her. If they need a new ad campaign. Mark, did you ever get to hold her or anything? Because there was always adverts with...
I spoke about it yesterday, Jimmy, that I was in the 89 advert, and then I got to meet her in 93 when she sang at the the Winfield Cup Grand Final.
I was a big fan. I was a big fan.
But you're back in LA. What are you doing there? Are you good to be home? Are you just hanging around the house, or are you?
I'm hanging around the house for a little bit, and then I'm going to go off. I've got a holiday. I'm going to Hawaii for a couple of weeks with the family. But before that, I just went to my kid's school concert. That's always fun.
So okay. Has he got an instrument or
a trumpet? Yeah, trumpet. It's either that or bloody drums. You've got to make your choice in life.
Does the trumpet? Has he got the Louis Armstrong cheeks? Does he get that? You know, the puff out when he's knocking out
he's
a tune.
Not, he's. I don't think he's that good yet to be the puffy cheeks, but he's giving it a go. And that we saw they had choirs there and all that type of stuff. All the celebrity parents were there. And you think the concert would be a bit better, to be honest with you.
with all that entertaining kind
yeah, with
of
all
pedigree
those
entertainment in the house.
Families, you think something would come up.
Hey, and you mentioned you're off to Hawaii. I love Hawaii because in Hawaii, I'm a medium to small.
Yes.
It's one of the, because everyone else, I'm like a supermodel in Hawaii. It's just the scale of that place is so good that someone of my carriage is all of a sudden very lithe, slim and athletic.
You are.
My favourite moment was watching the 6 o'clock news, their primetime news, and the newsreader was wearing a Hawaiian shirt. Yeah, like, and that's when I went, this place is for me. This is the right...
Oh, no. The Hawaiian shirts, they're no messing around. People just... No. That's what you wear to weddings.
That's it.
That's what you wear to funerals. That's what you wear to the work. Tennis. Everybody wear... politicians wear them in Parliament and stuff there.
In an open casket. You're wearing an Hawaiian shirt.
I have a mate who lives out in Hawaii, and he's off that TV show, Magnum. He's off that new series of Magnum.
Yeah,
he's off that. He's an actor from LA, and he moved out there, and he's been out there for like 5 seasons. And he reckons he hasn't put shoes on in years.
Yeah.
Like, he's just wearing thongs all the time. Like, it's such a good life out there. I'd love to live out there.
I was thinking about this the other day, and I don't know how it came up, but I thought if you could choose your own way of dying, how would you like to die? And obviously I was thinking about Elvis on the dunny and all that. Yeah, but in the end, what I settled on was being hit on the head by a coconut, because it basically means that you're in a great place in the world. You're probably on a hammock. You're underneath a palm tree. I mean, you wouldn't see it coming. Can anyone top getting hit on the head with a coconut as a way to go? I doubt it.
Yeah, but do you reckon it would be blunt force, like bang dead, or do you reckon you'd be in a bit of a state in hospital for months and months from your coconut related injury?
With a bit of a twitch in the coconut ward.
Over in the coconut ward.
Nurse Smith,
they go, we should probably put a roof on this.
Mate, the coconut, more people die from being hit on there with a coconut. Mate, it's coming from about 40 feet. But a coconut will take you out from 40 feet.
I understand how. Do you know why there's palm trees in LA? This is a little bit of an LA fun fact.
Yeah.
There weren't any palm trees in LA until the Olympics, and they did it to spruce the place up. And every Olympics they've had here since, they put more palm trees in.
Wow. So there you go.
But there's no. I got one in my backyard. There's no coconuts in them.
No.
They're coconut free.
They're cocos.
That should be a question on the 1% Club. Mate, thank you. We've covered a bit of ground today. Great to have you back on the program. We've missed you.
Yes, we have.
But we've been watching you on Channel 7 and the 1% Club. It's a great show. Well done. Thanks for and enjoy LA. I'll be over there shortly. I might come and throw stones at your window.
When are you going to be here?
I think it's the last week in June. Last week in June.
You know
June,
what I'll do? So. I'll throw a coconut at you in a car park. So everyone will assume that you're in a tropical place, but you're just in a Ralph's car park and you got hit in the head with a bloody coconut. I'll see you in June, man.
See you, Jimmy. Tick-tack,
tick-tack. Checking the latest online. No. It's Mick Talk.
Guys, this comes up every so often, and if it's the only bit of advice I ever give you, lock this down. get the rules of your syndicate when you're betting in a syndicate for the lotteries. Yes. All right, you've got a group ticket.
Yep.
Nail down the rules, because every time the big one goes off, someone's left behind or someone's ruled out, court action ensues, and great friendships are ruined for life. There's a guy now suing his co-worker after they excluded him from a $50 million lottery win because he was on vacation.
Oh, wow.
Now, this bloke had been in a lottery with 24 of his co-workers for years. He claimed he was a regular player in the Bombardier plant employee lottery pool and, in fact, was the one who started it. So when each player was awarded more than $1.9 million as part of the win, he was excluded.
Yeah, it's hard.
Because he was away on holiday. He decided to sue, and they've settled out of court, and he has got a payout. But you know what? This is not an isolated story. How many times have you gone? I know a bloke who had, we went into one at Triple M in Melbourne, and we had a usual ticket, and he's gone in and come back and gone, and we go, how'd we go? He goes, our ticket didn't win, but my other ticket won third division.
Wow.
And you go, what do you mean your other ticket? He goes, well, he went down and got two tickets, our syndicate ticket and his ticket. And he never gave or presented which ticket prior to the lottery. Oh. So afterwards he goes, oh, no, yeah, ours didn't win, but mine did well.
I've got the biggest heart. I've got the biggest heartache story you'll ever hear. I know a bloke. When he was 10 years of age, his mum and dad used to always put the pool balls on or Tats Lotto, whatever it was.
Yeah.
And one day his mum was in bed with a bad back, and she said, John, can you take this down, put the numbers on? And, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Oh, no.
And because he thought, you know, the mum and dad, they won't know. I'm just going to change the numbers to my numbers. that night, as they were watching, he was in his room doing something, and he heard his mum and dad shouting as loud as they could, yes, yes. And he walked out, and they said, what's going on? They said, we've just won the lotto at $1.3 million. And he looked at him, and he said, no, I changed the numbers.
Oh.
As a 10-year-old. He's now 53, 54. What about his life?
He's still paying off that debt to his parents.
Oh, my God.
Okay, here's one for you. This was another story from when I was in Melbourne. This guy at, like, the Ford plant or something had been in it with all his mates. And they said, oh, how'd we go this weekend? He goes, no, we didn't win anything. Anyway, he then retired and didn't go to work. Anyway, one of his mates who was in the syndicate, he'd ordered flowers to his house. So his mate, who's like a delivery guy, knocks on the door. The door opens. Inside the house is like his new hot girlfriend. And in the garage, there's a Lamborghini. And a Porsche. He goes, what's going on, mate? He goes, I thought you retired because you were injured. He goes, oh, yeah. Nah, don't worry about it. Who's that? Oh, this is my new girlfriend, like an 18-year-old supermodel. Anyway, his mate, he's dropped off the thing, goes back to work and goes, mate, I don't know what's going on. They did an investigation. The ticket did win. It was worth about $40 million.
Wow.
And he had never told any of his mates.
Oh,
but he only got busted because he'd organised flowers in one of his mates. So what's the lesson we're saying here today?
Have rules. Have rules and regulations when you're going into a syndicate.
Yep.
And I think we should go into one, guys.
No.
What do you think?
No, because you'll take it all.
You would not tell us.
I would. No. I would leave town in a heartbeat.
Yep.
I'm going to
the See ya. Bye. See ya, guys. Joy getting up at 6 every morning. I'm done. I'm on a boat in the Bahamas. Ha ha. The biggest story in town as we speak, and it's the fire that raged through the CBD yesterday. Natasha Belling joins us live in the studio, of course, has run around from the newsroom. You've been covering it all morning. What do we need to know? What are the basics? What can you tell us about the origins of this fire and where it stands right now?
Okay, it unfolded around 4 o'clock yesterday afternoon, you know, during that peak hour. It caused traffic chaos. It happened in Surry Hills, right in Sydney CBD.
Yep.
A massive blaze erupted. It has completely gutted this heritage building in Surry Hills. It was so fierce, the fire, it actually completely destroyed the building and also caused the walls to collapse. So when firefighters arrived yesterday afternoon, 100 firefighters arrived at the scene to try and put this massive blaze out. Adam Dewberry, the fire boss, had this to say about what happened when they arrived at the scene yesterday.
It was evident that this fire was significant. It was spreading rapidly. It was a very intense fire, extremely hot. They moved in to try and do a search, did what they could, but they were pushed back due to the intensity of this fire.
Now,
a huge, yep, go on.
Now, thankfully, it was unoccupied, this building, so
yeah,
thankfully no one's been injured. The fire authorities did a great job, but it was pretty frightening. The scene was extraordinary. The flames were huge, plumes of smoke all over the city, and nearby residents had to be evacuated, and this is what they said at the scene.
That's hectic. That was actually the Channel 9 reporter on the spot. Give me any suspicious circumstances. Is it too early? What do we know?
Well, the fire investigators are back at the scene this morning. They're still evacuated a number of local streets, have closed off because they're concerned that another wall will collapse. But they haven't ruled out arson or suspicious circumstances, and they're continuing their investigations.
It's a bloody miracle no one was injured, really. That's such an intense fire that we saw. It's right near Central Station. Very, very lucky no one was hurt or injured.
I'm not to spell speculation, of course, but most suspicious fires aren't started at 4 in the afternoon, is what I would say is generally the rule. If you're going to burn down a building for whatever reason, it generally happens in the wee hours of the morning, but we will know more. You have another eyewitness account for us, which I believe this girl has been doing the rounds pretty much wherever she saw a microphone or a camera, elbowed her way to the front of the queue and became part of the story. Let's hear her eyewitness account.
The building just went woof, and there were these huge white flames, just they enveloped the entire structure, and there was these huge black billowing smoke going right up into the air, and we could hear bang, snap, pop of all these things exploding inside the building, and there was stuff falling onto the road, like bits of glass and parts of the building.
See, the reporter had to cut it off.
She did it. check her pockets. She's got a lighter, a box of matches, and an accelerant in some kind of pocket. That's the best eyewitness account I've heard since the Chick Chick Boom girl. Do you remember her?
They pulled out a gun and just went Chick Chick Boom.
Surprised she wasn't there. All right, well, obviously, we'll keep covering that story and give you all the details as it unfolds.
Fittler charges away, steps back on the inside and scores for New South Wales.
Here's an intercept. Brad Fittler scores the try.
The man himself, Coach Brad Fittler.
Here he is, 5 days out. Brad Freddie Fittler joins us here on the Triple M Brekkie Show. Freddie, good morning, my man. How are you?
Morning, Boob. Morning, Mick.
Hello, mate. How are you?
Good.
Freddie, what does your next couple of days look like, buddy, as a team? When do you head to the City of Churches?
Righto. The boys get down this morning. We go for a bit of a walk, come back, have some brekkie. Got a session today, which is pretty important. And they go, break camp until Sunday. We come back in Sunday where we train. Head down to Adelaide on Monday. And captain's run on Tuesday. Play Wednesday.
The three debutants, I suppose, all the focus is on them, Nico Hines, Tevita Pengai Jr. and Hudson Young. How are they acclimatised to the Origin camp?
Yeah, well, I think Nico seems to be he's just in peak form at the moment. He just comes in. He's very comfortable with everything we do, and he's incredibly educated. So anything we're doing at training, he just catches on so well. Tavita and Hudson have been very interesting. A little bit of sort of talk around how they play. They, you know, they're pretty confrontational blokes, aren't they? And they don't mind mixing it up. So that's mostly something we need. And had a contact session the other day and seen the little crazy eyes roll around. Nothing like that look where you go, ooh, thank God, I'm glad I'm not playing anymore.
Well, Freddie, there's a big story in the back of the Daily Telegraph today, inked by Matty Johns, and it's a bit of a cautionary tale, and it's suggesting that Tavita Pangai Jr. not to become a State of Origin casualty. And then there's a big picture of our mate MG under the under the category what not to do. How do you approach that balance between flat out aggression and losing your mind?
Well, I remember Gus Gould, it was a long time ago at Penrith, and he said, I don't care if they're biting your ear off, you don't give up the ball when you got it. So it sort of means that, you know what, when you got the ball, you need to show a real level of control. And they'll be out there and they'll be baiting him and whatever they want to do. I don't really care, but I instruct him to go out. The thing I've been impressed with him at Canterbury is his level of control. I just watch him, does a lot of effort stuff and just, you know, a lot of the stuff that coaches enjoy watching. So. But yeah. I don't, you know, he'll have instructions to go out there and be wholehearted and go as hard as he can.
Well, it's another level of interest already on top of what is going to be a classic encounter. I want to ask you how you feel about taking what is such a marquee event to the state of South Australia and Adelaide Oval. Is it something you look forward to, or do you just think this should be played in the hallowed turf of Queensland and New South Wales?
Well, I think, Mick, it's something that's been such a great success for the game. And because the players are, I mean, they're so invested. The fans are so invested. So I feel like it's an advantage if you've got two games in your home city. And then I also feel like if we're going to advertise a game and promote it anywhere, you may as well take your best game. And so, you know what, as a rugby league fan, I think it's a really good idea. It would be nice to have two games every now and then on your own ground. I think it'd be a massive advantage. But, yeah, I do believe that, I think it's because the players are so invested in it, it doesn't fail. You're not going to take the game away and, come away and go, our blokes weren't quite on today. That doesn't sort of happen in this game.
Well, we know that there will be no stone unturned. We know that you and your coaching staff of Bedsy and Brandy and co will be doing everything they can to get this first game won and done, because it's a very important clash. But in news overnight, I'd love to get your thoughts on this, Freddie. The NRL will officially kick off the 2024 season with a game in Viva Las Vegas.
Really?
Are we going?
Yes. Hand up.
A little different to Adelaide. If you ask me, do you want to go and watch this in Adelaide or Vegas? I know what I'm saying, Freddie. I know which one I'm lobbing towards.
Yeah. Pick me, Mick. Pick me.
We'll all go luck. Together. It'll be a load of fun. Yeah. You'll be down picking there, brother. Me by the time that game goes to air. So. Good on you, mate. And good luck. This whole state, you feel the weight of it. It's so important to so many people. Get the job done on behalf of everyone and myself, honorary New South Welshman. Good on you, mate.
Good on you, mate.
See you down there, Fricky.
This is the kind of behaviour you expect at a bachelor or bachelorette party. New survey out, and this is astonishing. And we're going to poll the electorate on this one. If you pardon the phrase. Check this out. More than 70% of people, according to new research, cheated at a bachelor or bachelorette party. 70%? Oh, what?
Bastards. What are they doing? Come on.
That is a huge percent. I'm not sure if I believe that.
No.
If I do, it's a very sad state of affairs that you would do that. This will be a fun conversation in the car for anyone going to a bachelor party. this weekend. Sorry to ruin it for you, fellas, ladies. But that's an awesome statistic. I don't believe it. And by the way, don't lap dance and tell. That's been a policy of mine for some years.
Is that is it regarded as cheating, a lap dance? Is that kind of, is, I mean...
Well, this is up for grabs. I wouldn't have thought so.
No. I wouldn't think so. I wouldn't be upset.
I mean, I've got a fair idea of where the line is, and that's a fair way short, is all I'm saying. Well, you know what, this is going to come as a shock to you guys, but I haven't been to many bachelor parties, to be honest. Well, I can't even think of one. My life's just one big bachelor party. There's no need to go to a party in a party.
You're right.
Here's my rules regarding bucks parties or bachelor parties. No combined ones. You know, that we've got the stage where people have a hucks party where you go, let's have the hens and the bucks. No. That's going to end in tears.
I can think of another word. It sounds like hucks.
Well, none of that at the hucks or the bucks. And here's one I just implore you not to embrace. No father-in-laws at the bucks party. It just, that is secret men's business, boys' business, or otherwise, but you don't, the last thing you want to do is look across the room and see your future father-in-law. Yeah.
Go behind a curtain.
Standing there with his arms folded.
My father and father-in-law were the last ones standing at my bucks party. They were the last ones standing.
Tell me about your bucks party. What happened at yours?
Well, I got married in 1993, and basically we started at the log cabin. We then went on to the rowing club. Mine was basically a 3-day festival of the
3-day bucks party.
I had about 130 blokes or friends, inverted commas. All of a sudden, the numbers started getting bigger and bigger, and it went for about 3 days. I was just. It was a good one. And my dad and
What type of entertainment was there? What did you have?
There was none. There was none because I realised that this could get us into trouble if we have any type of that. And I don't want any trouble.
So have you read the Riot Act? Have you? Because a lot of guys I know go, guys, please do not organise me any strippers. I don't want you to do it. Yep. And then when you don't do it, they go, where was the strippers?
Yeah.
Well, that was me. I said, I don't want anything.
A three-day bucks party. Well done.
Yeah.
Just get on.
Well done. Once again, no invite for Mickey, but I'll get over it. Kat, you've been involved in a few of these.
Oh, heaps of them. I've done a jello shot out of Tim Robard's belly button, the first original bachelor. He was a topless waiter at one of our hens nights.
Rewind.
He rocked. This is before he went on The Bachelor. Well, he was a topless waiter. And, he came to one of our hens nights for my friends. That was wonderful.
He's on my list.
Oh, no. Why?
Yeah, because I don't like strippers.
Oh.
All right. So you did a jello shot out of Tim Robart's belly button.
Yep, that was great.
Tash, can you top that? Tash, like the type of thing you'd get up to.
Is that hygienic, Kat?
Oh, God.
You're not thinking about it.
I'll tell you what we'll do. Hold that thought. We'll come back and get you, Tash. But 133353, have you been to a bachelor party, hen's night? What happened? What was extraordinary? Let's lift the lid. Be our witness. What went on? Lewis is on the line. Louis, pardon me. Louis, what was it, your bucks party?
Oh, no chance, mate. No, it was one of my workmates' parties.
Yeah.
And we're at the back of his house having a bit of a barbie. Then this hooker arrived, which was arranged by his missus. he had to do the deed with her and had to get her all on tape, which they did in front of everyone. And him and his missus watched it the next day, apparently.
It's on their wedding video.
What's his address?
What's his address? And does she have a sister? No. Does she have someone?
Well, I don't think it lasted real long, the
marriage. That's the type of detail we're talking about.
Oh, Louis.
Good on you, Louis. Thanks for that. Natasha Belling, I heard your hen's night was completely out of control. What happened?
It was not. We had a
What did you do? You and this would have been a bus full of naked people doing one of those party buses with disco music, doing a pub crawl, ending up at some kind of men's gallery style strip house. What was it?
Similar to that, it was a bus tour, a wine tour in the Hunter Valley in New South Wales.
Oh, yeah.
Play that music, Kat.
I had my best girlfriends with me, and we just hired a house and we all ended up there, and it was all very, very peaceful.
What time did he come around? What time did the Jack Ripper come around?
We did have a chef.
Inverted commas.
Like a chef stripper? Like he was dressed as a chef?
No. We had a lovely weekend.
Oh.
Tell me more.
Okay, what was the wildest thing that happened on your hen?
A solo fight?
No, we were dancing out on the lawn later that night. That's it.
What were you dancing to? What were you dancing to?
Best shot. Yeah, hit me with your best shot, Pat Benatar.
Let's go back to Kat. I prefer Kat's stories to yours. So you had a jello shot out of Tim Robards' belly button.
Yeah, that was pre-bachelor. Yep, so he was single, obviously, and doing topless waitering. But the best one I saw was when I was tour guiding overseas in Europe. You had bachelorette and bachelor parties that would come on for a week's tour and then go back and get married. And the weirdest one was in Portugal. I rocked up and there was a girl that clearly had been there for a while and she was dating a Portuguese surf instructor.
What?
And I said, how did you, it seems like you've come straight off one of the tours and you've stayed here. And she's like, I was on my hen's trip and did a surfing lesson with this guy. And I've never gone back. The rest of the bachelorette party went back. I stayed and broke up with my husband over an email.
That's a terrifying story. Are they still together?
I think they might be. They were, from what I remember, because I did a few years, and the next loop around, she was still there the next year. So,
well done. Everyone, just be careful if you're going to a bucks party or a hen's night. Behave. Here's the other rule. Don't have it on the night before the wedding.
No
eyebrows. The eyebrows be gone.
See, there you are, MG. That to me, that's good old fashioned fun.
Yeah.
If you're going to go to a Bucks night, if the Bucks wakes up tied to a boom gate, good harmless fun.
Yep, no eyebrows.
Wakes up with no eyebrows. Great. But let's keep it clean, guys. Now, join us in the studio, Natasha Belling. This always means a huge news story.
Yes, massive.
That's beyond our ability to introduce. What do we need to know, Natasha Belling?
Okay, do you know about the drug Ozempic? Have you heard about this?
Weight loss drug, very popular in Hollywood.
Yep.
It's actually a diabetes drug, but people are taking it to lose weight. And it's caused a lot of controversy because diabetics are saying we need this drug for our seriously to live well. And a lot of people
can't
get
their hands on it.
Yeah, to lose weight. Apparently, a lot of big Hollywood celebs that have dropped a lot of weight have been using this drug. But now there's a fair bit of evidence coming out that it has serious side effects, including.
Like what?
Problems with their gastrointestinal system.
Don't put it like that. They're shitting the bed. People who are taking Ozempic for weight loss are reportedly crapping in their own nest, waking up and...
Good morning, Sydney.
That's definitely one way to lose weight.
Yes.
I would have thought. In fact, I imagine your whole bed will lose weight because you'll be sleeping alone.
Yeah.
How badly do you want to lose weight? MG, here's one for you. I just hope whoever's taking a Zempic isn't sleeping in the top bunk.
Oh, huh.
Hey, John Boy.
Or falling asleep next to me on a long-haul flight.
Oh, gross.
Says oxygen masks drop from the ceiling.
So you've got to make a decision, don't you? You want to be skinny or you want to be Edgar in your pants? I'd rather be chubby.
Yeah, well, I'll tell chubby. You, that should have been Amber Heard's defence. I'm on the Ozempic.
MG's Sport Report. 4 and 20. We've been there for it all. Australia's original fan food.
All right, big fella, you need to repeat what you said earlier. I can't believe what I'm hearing. Are you telling me the NRL round one next year are off to Vegas? Viva! Oh, dear.
That's all I can say.
What? The NRL... Now, don't toy with me. Yes. What do you know?
Well, the NRL will officially kick off the 2024 season with a game in Las Vegas. One team has already been mentioned. It's the Brisbane Broncos, and obviously every other team in the competition is lining up to get a gig as well. The NRL will reportedly throw $200 million behind the initiative, and the deal will see a doubleheader play out next year with matches to be staged in the United States up until the end of 28. A formal announcement is expected in the next 3 or 4 weeks, Mickey, but it looks
in
like...
In Vegas.
NRL are off to Las Vegas.
What could possibly go wrong? NRL players, start of the season, Vegas, recipe for disaster. Now, I'm giving you plenty of notice, all right? Yep. I'm telling you this.
Yes.
If I hear that you head off to Vegas for that launch without me, I swear to God, it's over. Adelaide, yes, I can handle that. Okay, you're off to Adelaide. I get it. I'm not happy about it. But if you touch down in that city and I'm not there, I swear to you, that'll be the end of everything.
I will not even contemplate.
Say it. Write it down on a piece of paper.
Look, I'm saying it, and Kat, you can record this. I will not go to Las Vegas without my buddy Mickey Malloy. We're going together. We're tagging.
Because it's hurtful.
I know.
Do you know that? You go on your pub crawls, you go to your winery tours, now you're off to Adelaide for the state of origin. Nothing.
I'm going to the darts in Wollongong in August as well, if you want to come.
Well, how long has this been in the works? Why am I only hearing about this now?
I only got confirmed yesterday. It's kind of breaking news.
Jesus, I tell you. See me in my office after the...
Make sure the beer's cold when I get there.
Don't you worry. It's Friday. Now, what about this? Adelaide Oval, not sold out.
No.
I've got to say, not that it'll change anything, but that's slightly disappointing. This is an absolute marquee game on the Australian sporting calendar.
Yep.
They've made the effort to go to Adelaide. I would have thought... we could sell that out. Are you disappointed, or should I not be dwelling on this?
Well, we spoke to Brad Fittler earlier, and Freddie is very nonchalant. He wouldn't care if you played it in the Simpson Desert. But I think the NRL would be livid. I think the fact that they've taken one of the marquee games of our season away from the spiritual home grounds of New South Wales and Queensland. I don't mind. I'm all for spreading the word, but when it's a 53,000 capacity stadium, and allegedly there's only 41,000 tickets sold. That's not good enough. That's taking the piss. That is taking the piss, Adelaide, and you've got to do better. I know they've had some big events there recently. They had the Gather Round with Aussie Rules.
Live Golf.
They had Live Golf, but this is state of origin, man. This is the pinnacle of our game,
and this is a state that tried to pinch the test match
there you go.
Off Sydney, there you go. Saying, well, we'll house that because we're bigger, and I'm kind of glad they didn't get it. Empty seats, though, so they that would still open the door for me to get over to Adelaide. Yes. Where are you sitting? Where are you sitting?
I'm behind glass.
Jesus.
He doesn't want to tell you.
You know what? I don't even have the effort to do the Oasis story now. We're going to do it another time. What? Are you in a box?
I am in a box.
Oh, my God. Are you getting beer, like free beer?
Yes.
You must not be good company in his eyes, because he is really leaving you out of everything.
Suffering succotash.
Is he a loose cannon?
MG, I thought you were my friend.
I'm your best friend.
Did he get too drunk? What is it?
Look, he's ripping up the paper.
Oh. I'm contract. So, yeah.
Wow.
Shout it to the top, baby.
Shut up, MG. Stop
It's another wonderful week that was on Mick and MG in the Morning on Triple M Sydney. Some bootleg Bluey episodes have been causing a bit of kerfuffle with parents.
Here's some of the new episodes. One where Bluey turns up and he's got the lipstick out. You know, and I go, well, hang on, the kids don't need to see.
No, that's natural, but come on.
Had a particularly frightening episode where Bluey gets put down. And, the kids... kids don't need to see it. And another one, which is actually a bit of a tearjerker, when Bluey goes to the dog fights.
Oh!
And...
seagulls have been stealing drugs from drug dealers.
Now it makes sense that seagull... I saw him on Bondi Beach last week eating the cheese balls. Makes all sense. He's had the munchies.
He's got the munchies. Exactly right. That's why you see so many seagulls with one leg. They've had their legs broken. Because they owe money.
MG was a part of one of the world's worst cricket teams at school.
We were rolled for three. We got out for 3 wins.
But the whole team?
And two of them were boys, and there was 9 ducks.
And who was the top scorer?
Someone got
one. Bloke with one.
And Mick's school cricket team was pretty hopeless as well, so they resorted to other tactics.
We were driving to the ground. The coach had like a people mover, and it had about eight kids in it, nine in a team in it. Anyway, it broke down. Right, so on the way to the ground, the cops in a paddy wagon came past and said, "What's going on?" They said, "We're running late." So they put all the kids in the back of the paddy wagon. So when we pulled up to the ground, the other team is on the ground and the door's open, and then 8 of us get out of the back of a paddy wagon. The other team shat themselves, and the rest is history.
Tash had a particularly brutal tackling technique.
I've also, to stop a guy scoring a try, I've sat on him.
Okay.
Oh, that's okay. That's a trip to the judiciary as far as I'm concerned. Let's go to the bunker on that one.
MG revealed that he'd sent a rude text to Barnaby Joyce.
One of my mates called Bass sent me a video, and it was kind of, you know, like a pool table, and it was, I'll leave it to your imaginations. And I read the reply back to him, and I accidentally sent the video to my next contact under Bass, which was Barnaby. And I said, "Oh shit, I've just sent that to Barnaby Joyce."
And said, what did Barnaby say?
And about 10 seconds later, he said, interesting.
What?
Pauline Hanson is knitting sweaters to fund her racial discrimination defence.
And why does someone in North Queensland spend so much time knitting jackets? Like, is she mad? And this is my greater fear. She's going to go the OnlyFans route.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Now, Pauline Hanson, MG, you're all for it.
Would you subscribe? What would you subscribe?
If she was wearing nothing but her knit cardigan.
And the team shared what we have saved each other as in our phones.
You know, like if it was Tash, it would be Chatty MILF from Northern Suburbs. I'm sure I've been saved out there by many girls as Hottie with Massive Wang.
Cute little hairy. That's what you've been. You're in my phone.
Hey.
Cuddly. Cute little hairy.
Okay, girls, you know what? This started off as a bit of fun. And now...
until someone gets hurt.
Hairy, needy, but fun.
Oh, yeah. Right,
funny,
girls.
Cute guy.
So, in his office. Go. In his office.
See me in my office now.
Cute little big calves.
Right, okay. No, that's my Dances with Wolves name. Little big calves.
Man with the Negroni.
Okay, you've had it. You're done here. Stop it. Stop.
There it is, another week that was on Mick and MG in the Morning on Triple M Sydney.
Mick and MG in the Morning, weekdays from 6 on Sydney's Triple M.